in the name of God, most gracious, most merciful. Mr. Y.P. Trivedi, the chief guest of the evening, Mr. Rashmi Bhai Zaveri, Dr. Zakir Naik, Mr. Chaman Bhai Vora, Mr. Dhanraj Salecha, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, Assalamu alaikum. May peace be on you. On behalf of the organizers, the Indian Vegetarian Congress, the Islamic Research Foundation, and the Rushab Foundation, I welcome all of you today to this morning's unique program, a public dialogue on the topic, is non-vegetarian food permitted or prohibited for a human being? It is being held in a spirit of friendship and understanding each other's viewpoints. I, Dr. Muhammad Naik, am the coordinator for this dialogue. Hence, I occupy a neutral position. It is my onerous duty to ensure a fair and proper conduct of this meeting. Therefore, I would request both our speakers as well as the audience to maintain due decorum for a healthy and lively debate as well as a dialogue. Now we would have the past president of the Indian Vegetarian Congress, Mr. Jayantilal R. Doshi, welcoming and introducing the chief guest of the evening, Mr. Y.P. Trivedi. Mr. Jayantilal Doshi.
Mr. Y.P. Trivedi, he is a very senior advocate in the Supreme Court of India and leading tax expert of Mumbai. His activity in economics field inside ex-president of Indian Mercantile Chambers and active members of chairman of many other institute, trade and industrial body. In professional field, he was president of Chambers of IT Consultant and Vice President of IT Tribunal and Bar Association. In political field, he is leader of Maha Pradesh Congress Committee, BRSCC. He is also chairman and director of many public limited company, Reliance and Dana Bank. In education field, he was location of Master's degree in lower and Bombay University. He regularly continues article of various submitted in different papers and journalists. He has addressed a member of senior and meeting of Rotary, Lions Club, etc. and Air India and Doordarshan, etc. Thank you.
Now we have Mr. Dhanraj Salecha, President of the Rushab Foundation, presenting mementos to our chief guest, as well as garlanding him on behalf of the organizers. Now we have our chief guest, Mr. Y.P. Trivedi, addressing our audience collected here today. Mr. Y.P. Trivedi.
Dr. Zakir Naik, Mr. Rashmi Zaveri, Dr. Mamad Naik, Dr. Dhanraj Salecha, Chimanlal Vora, and friends. Before I give my introductory speech, I have been told and I think I would like to repeat and say with great firmness that one of the greatest friend and the greatest enemy of our civilization is the cellular phone. And all those who have got cellular phones, it's a great friend, you know, when you are in absolute necessity, and when you are in a meeting, it's a great enemy. So I would request all those with cellular phones, please switch off the phone and do not disturb, because it disturbs the train of thinking of those who are speaking, on those who are attending and other listening very attentively. Friends, I welcome all the speakers and all of you here to this very healthy debate which is taking place. I believe that this should be the beginning of similar debates which should take place in the times to come. This debate or discussion or the clearing house of mind is probably in the best traditions both of the Hindu civilization as well as of Islam. In our mythology and our history, we have such instances of such debates taking place in the courts of kings like Janak, when people from various shades of thoughts, because Hinduism was never following one particular pattern of thinking. There was Bhakti Marg, there was non-dualism, there was Advait Marg, there was Charvaks who did not believe in any god. So all of them, Janak king, King Janak, used to assemble them, provoking them to debate, not trying to influence anybody, but inviting the thoughts and then leaving the debate to the people at large to make up their own mind. So that was the tradition of our Hindu religion in this land of India. That was also the tradition of Islam in the immediately succeeding years after the demise of Prophet Muhammad. Islam was a religion, Arabia was the place which was the place of learning, logics, mathematics, astronomy. All this was being discussed, and the great scholars of Arabia imbibed the thought, made inquiries, and transformed that knowledge thereafter to the Western world. According to me, the Renaissance movement in Europe owes its origin to the thinking of these Arab thinkers who were great stalwarts in their own time. We very often associate Arabia with thinking about Arabian Nights. But let me tell you that apart from the strides which they made in the field of fiction and some of the most imaginative fictions, at the same time in the field of science, technology, thinking, logics, mathematics, they made great strides. That is why today also, in spite of all the achievements, the West is still talking about the numerals as the Arabic numerals. And this is how Islam also in those days used to think openly. That tradition has been continued, because I believe in the realm of King Akbar. He also used to call people from all religions, even the Christians who came at that time. They landed on the shore of India. They were also called and they were asked to explain what are the tenets of the religion. So this sort of healthy debate is something which is an absolute necessity for the development of any cultured, civilized and tolerant society. Dr. Vora said that he is neutral. Let me tell him and all of you, I am also neutral. If I would not have been neutral, I would not have been made the chief guest. And I do not wish to desire to make any final comment on the subject. But one school of thought I would like to narrate here, which I read at some place, that all those animals in nature who are grass eaters, the animals which are thriving on leaves, they have got bovine teeth. They do not have canine teeth. all those animals which are eating flesh, meat eaters, they have got canine teeth, what we call rakshi. Human beings is the one species which has got both bovine teeth as well as canine teeth. So it is very likely that nature wanted this species to survive. Nature considered that this species, human beings, are the most important species which should be there in this world. They should try to contribute, they should try to carry my message and take it further. So they wanted, the nature probably wanted, this species to survive under all circumstances. Nobody can deny. Then the early Homo sapiens or Homo erectus, they are all flesh eaters. At that time there was no agriculture, if you look at the evolution as we now learn from science. It is only the advance of civilization that people started taking to agriculture. When they started taking to agriculture and started growing corns, some of them became vegetarian, some of them remained non-vegetarian, some of them became the mixture of both. They also took vegetarian as well as non-vegetarian. And most of the non-vegetarian people today also eat vegetarian food as a part of their diet. I believe that in this aspect, when you are talking whether it is permitted or prohibited, we are talking about permission or prohibition by the religion. In this one aspect, Dr. Nayak, I would probably like to differ from you. I believe that it is not the function of religion to tell us what we should eat and what we should not eat. Religion should try to purify our soul, purify our conscience, talk about good behavior, lead us to the path of God. What we should eat, what we should not eat is something which the doctors should tell us. The nutrition experts should tell us. It is not the function of the religion to say you shall not eat garlic, you shall not eat onions, you shall not eat ginger. Because this is something, if subsequently the nutritional experts tell us that this is something which is very good for your health, which is very good for your survival, which is very good for you to fight your diseases, then certainly it has to be taken. Because these are the subjects in modern day science. We have to grow up. We have to think in terms of what is lying ahead of us. We are entering now the next millennium, 21st century. So much is expected from us. Today only I was reading in one of the magazines about the forecast of Nostradamus. And Nostradamus thinks that this particular country, which is surrounded on three sides by sea, that one country will come on the top of the world. And are we going to go into the top of the world, become a superpower, by just clinging ourselves to some of the outdated notions? For example, yesterday, so many people migrated from this country. I was wondering in the heart of my heart, what is it? There is no scientific explanation. All throughout, all people with any basis of logic, all people who knew something about science, they were saying nothing will happen whether eight planets come in one line or they go zigzag. Nothing is going to happen. But then all types of talks were there. Alang, which was our largest shipyard, that was completely forsaken and completely deserted. I was told that for rushing to Rajasthan, I don't understand why people from Rajasthan are so panicky. The Marwaris left everything, came here and made an empire. At the same Marwaris, thinking eight planets are there, they ran away. I was told 2,500 rupees were paid for a bus ticket for going back to Rajasthan. And nothing happened. So what is very important for all of us, if this country has to go further, if we as a nation has to make our mark, and probably the destiny is before us, we can reach great strides. The 21st century, as I have always been saying, belongs to India and Pakistan. Both of them, when they will come nearer and nearer, they will be able to become the leaders of the 21st century. And if that is going to happen, then let me tell you, we will have to get out of these old dogmas. What we should eat, we should not eat, the doctor should tell us. If a new scientific discovery is made, and I have been asked that I should eat tomatoes because it fights the cancerous growth, then I must eat tomatoes, irrespective of what my religion tells me. So I think let us go to the scientists, let us develop for ourselves a modern mind, a scientific approach. Then I think today or tomorrow, the whole world is before us. I don't want to comment on the or trespass on the domain of the speakers. With this introductory remarks, I am once again trying to point out I am absolutely neutral. And I would like to hear the views of the learned people who have made research on the subject. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Trivedi. Now we have brief introductions of each of the speakers before we get into the mode of formal dialogue program. We have Mr. Chamanbhai Vora, Senior Vice President of the Indian Vegetarian Congress, to introduce Mr. Rashmibhai Zaveri.
Well, today I feel very happy to introduce our President, Sri Rashmibhai Zaveri, President of the Indian Vegetarian Congress. I think this public dialogue will become very, very interesting looking to the introductory speech given by our Chief Learned Guest Vice P. Trivedi. So let us hope for the very good dialogue. Now, Rashmibhai Zaveri is a chartered accountant by profession. He is having his own firm, Rashmi Zaveri and Company. They are very well reputed in the field of, as far as the corporate sector is concerned. And he is a very good speaker. As far as the religious speeches are concerned, he is a master of many of the religious philosophies. He is a very active member of the Chartered Accountant Society. Himself is the member of the Bharat Jain Mahamandal. He is the founder president of the Forum of Jain Intellectuals, one of the very prominent institutions as far as the Jain people are concerned. And he is very well connected with the Kala Gurjari also. Though he is very young, at the age of 63, he is very energetic. And he looks forward always to this type of dialogues, and today's dialogue is really a very good one. And I especially before, by giving the introduction of Mr. Rashmibhai Zaveri, I would like to thank our chief guest as well as our Dhanraji and our Jhakir Naik Sahab for having a very good dialogue, whether by principle a human being can take or should not take the vegetarian and non-vegetarian foods. Thank you very much.
Mr. Ashraf Mohammadi to introduce Dr. Zakir Naik.
Dr. Zakir Abdul Karim Naik, 33 years, is the president of the Islamic Research Foundation, Mumbai. Though a medical doctor by professional training, he is renowned as a dynamic international orator on Islam and comparative religion. Dr. Zakir removes misconceptions about Islam on the basis of Quran, Hadith, and religious scriptures of various other religions. He also uses reason, logic, and modern scientific facts to remove the misconceptions about Islam. He is popular for his critical analysis and convincing answers to challenging questions posed by audiences after his public talks. In the last 3 years itself, he has delivered more than 300 public talks worldwide. Dr. Zakir also appears on various international TV and satellite TV channels throughout the world. He has also participated in various symposias and such dialogues with prominent personalities of various faiths.
I have been asked by many persons, why are we having this dialogue, this topic, these speakers only? I hereby clarify. Mr. Dhanraj Salecha, President of Rushabh Foundation, once visited the Islamic Research Foundation office about 1.5 months ago. He presented the Islamic Research Foundation kindly with a set of literature favoring vegetarianism. These included quotations from major world religions, which included quotations also from the Quran and sayings of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, which according to him indicate that non-vegetarian food is prohibited for human beings. After some discussions, Mr. Salecha proposed that a public dialogue be held at Patkar Hall between Mr. Rashmi Bhai Zaveri, President of the Indian Vegetarian Congress, and Dr. Zakir Naik, President of Islamic Research Foundation, on the topic, is non-vegetarian food permitted or prohibited for a human being? This would in turn enable the audience at large to know the different viewpoints of both the speakers and form their own judgment. Both the speakers agreed to the same. Just about 5 days back, that is this Tuesday, I met Mr. Zaveri and he requested that both the speakers in their talk refrain from speaking on other religions except their own. Dr. Zakir, though being very ardently in the field of comparative religion, reluctantly agreed. Therefore, as far as the religious points are concerned in the talk and response of our speakers, Mr. Zaveri will speak only from the Jain viewpoint unless compelled otherwise. Similarly, Dr. Zakir will speak only from the Islamic viewpoint unless compelled otherwise. This, in brief, is the clarifying background to the dialogue. The format for the dialogue will be as agreed to and decided fair by the speakers. Mr. Rashmi Bhai Zaveri will first address us for 50 minutes on the topic, is non-vegetarian food permitted or prohibited for a human being? Then Dr. Zakir Naik will make his presentation for 50 minutes on the same topic. This would be followed by a response session in which Mr. Zaveri will respond for 15 minutes to the matter presented by Dr. Zakir. Similarly, Dr. Zakir too would then respond for 15 minutes to the matter presented by Mr. Zaveri. When 5 minutes are left for the conclusion of the talk or the response time, I would put before each speaker a rate saying 5 minutes left in which time they are expected to conclude. Lastly, we would have the question and answer session in which the audience may pose questions to each of the speakers alternately on the question mics provided in the auditorium. Written questions on slips of paper would be given secondary preference if time allows us. Now, I would request our first speaker, Mr. Rashmi Bhai Zaveri, to present his address. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Rashmi Bhai Zaveri.
Before I start my talk, I am really very happy that this atmosphere of brotherhood, it has really moved me. And I will request Dr. Zakir Naik to come forward and let's have a gale lag ja scene. The chief guest of this morning, Mr. Y.P. Trivedi, President of Rushabh Corporation, Sri Dhanraj Salecha, the learned speaker, Dr. Zakir Naik, the expert commentator and the coordinator, Dr. Mohammad Nayak, Vice President of IVC, Sri Chaman Bhai Vora, other dignitaries on and off the dais, my friends, brothers and sisters. First of all, I must acknowledge the dedication, the sincerity with which all the three organizations, particularly Islam Research Foundation, has taken pains in arranging this lecture. I don't mind and I don't hesitate in saying the entire credit goes to IRF. Friends, the topic today is non-veg food permitted or prohibited for a human being? Any argument or any statement for that matter is always to be considered from a relative point of view. There cannot be any absolute truth, there cannot be any absolute statement that it is 100% prohibited or 100% permitted. So friends, let's see, as very rightly put in by Mr. Trivedi, who started the ball rolling, that we will not speak only from religious point of view. Religious has to enter. You can't divorce it from today's subject. But I would like to speak on this topic, that non-veg food is prohibited for human being from various angles. For example, geographical reason, historical reason, moral, ethical and religious reason, economical, environmental and ecological reasons, natural reasons and psychological reasons, and above all, medical reasons. It's a fact now well established that our actions are controlled by our thoughts. What we think, we act. And our thoughts are controlled by our diet. As we eat, so we behave. And that's why the topic is very important, that we should choose our diet in such a way that our thinking is positive. The word positive will include everything. And believe me friends, not only all the religions, but the medical science has now proved that the food that we take, it definitely influences our thinking and so our behavior. Friends, there was a time when there was no alternative available, as Mr. Trivedi rightly put. There were places on this world, and there are even now places where there is no availability of vegetation. It is simply not possible because of the extreme circumstances. But now the world has progressed so much that there is a very advanced system of transportation which is available to us. And any type of commodity, including food, can be transported from one part of the globe to another without any problem. Now that when we have got alternatives, we have to think about this, which alternative is better from all the angles that which I have described earlier. And that's why, friends, I am now coming to my topic proper, that non-veg food is not permitted now at this point of time, not only for India but for other countries of the world also. First of all, I will say that all Indian philosophies have stated that we should not harm any living being, not only the living beings that we can see, but also those living beings which we cannot see, which are in air, fire, water, etc. But always there is a limit. It's very difficult for a human being to refrain from total ahimsa, total hinsa or violence because of his needs. So that is why Lord Mahavir stated that at least you limit the essential killings, but absolutely no killing for your own selfish motive or for your own needs of hunger, etc. And that is why under Jainism and most of the Indian philosophies, non-veg food is totally prohibited. Now this is a religious aspect. I will not go very deep into it. But the psychological aspect, the effect that non-veg food has on our thoughts and deeds, that is the most important part. The learned authors, I will not now quote the names of the books and authors because that will take time. But I have got all the authorities with me. It is said that veg diet reduces needless suffering in the world and also preserves our ecosystem. See, when I talk about alternative, you look here, you look at the wild animals who stay in jungle. Those who are carnivorous, they will restrict themselves to meat eating only. But those animals which are herbivorous, they will never go for meat eating. Only human being is such because of some false notions, I will say. It is the human being has been both a carnivorous and herbivorous. As I said, if alternative is available, why should we go for unnecessary killing? The basic principle underlying this theory is non-violence, love, and compassion for animals, birds, fish, etc. Because flesh food falls in not essential category, while vegetarian food comes under essential category. Psychologically also, cruelty, instant impulses, urges, basic animal instincts, impatience are all the necessary consequences of flesh food. By eating animal flesh, man will ingest all the animal instincts, the four basic animal instincts of food, fear, possessiveness and reproduction. These are there in men, I don't say no, but they are the basic instincts. We have got a reasoning mind. We can rise above these basic instincts. We can control our impulses and urges and become, then only we can become super animals or super beings. Otherwise, human being and animals, there is no difference at all. But man has additional quality called reasoning mind, which is blunted by the influence of flesh, food, and man becomes more like animal. The scientific reason for this is that flesh is an integral part of animal body. It is full of tamasic value. There are three types of values: tamasic, rajasic and sattvic. Tamasic in short is the brutal sense or brutal instincts of animal. A man becomes more like an animal. He is callous, he is cruel, he is ignorant if he is eating the food that is the part of the bodies of the dead animals. The crime rate is higher. Aggression in the natural is the natural consequences of fresh food. It distorts the thinking and reasoning. It is not only a problem by itself, but it creates many other problems like increase in crimes, cruelty, etc. The virtues like compassion, sharing, self-control are obliterated by the impact of flesh food. If we insist on treating animals more brutally, then our behavior will also become less human and more brutal. I will quote one shayari that what will happen if this animal instincts is so embedded in our heart, what will become of man? Aadami ki shakla se ab dar raha hai aadami. Aadami ki shakla se ab dar raha hai aadami. Aadami ko loot kar ghar bhar raha hai aadami. Aadami hi marta hai mar raha hai aadami. Aadami hi marta hai mar raha hai aadami. Samajh kuch aata nahi kya kar raha hai aadami. Friends, this is because the man has become an animal. He does not then distinguish between whether he is an animal or a human being. Because this is the influence of the food, the flesh food that he eats. Flesh food is the cause of PMS syndrome, that is preposterous mood swing and psychological distortions. Thus, it is now established that if flesh food is the root cause of moral and spiritual degeneration. We at Indian Vegetarian Congress, we are working for important task, since it will lead to a more humane world at peace with animal kingdom and with each other. We at IVC define a vegetarian as one who does not at any time or under any circumstances eat meat, fish, fowl, eggs or any other type of fresh food. Vegetarian does not come from vegetable. Now this is very important, friends, understand. The word vegetarian does not come from vegetable. The root is derived from the word vegetus, V-E-G-E-T-U-S, meaning whole, sound, fresh, lively. Nothing is more powerful than an individual acting out of his conscience, thus helping to bring the collective conscience to life. That is what Norman Cousins said. And what does Albert Schweitzer has to say? Until man extends his circle of compassion to all living things, man will not find peace for himself. It is a man's sympathy with all creatures that first makes him truly a human being. Now friends, I will go next to the most important topic, and that is the medical viewpoint. It's a fallacy, friend. It's a myth to say that we don't get enough protein from veg food. And that is why a man must have flesh food that is rich in protein. I'll come one by one to these myths. First of all, I will first give you examples of those strong animals. Say elephant, say rhino. These are the strongest animals on this earth. Are they meat eaters? No. They are pure veg. Even if they die, they will not eat meat. Even then, they are the strongest. Take example of horse. We talk about horse power. It's the most powerful creature, useful for our purpose, and that is also a pure vegetarian. And take examples of cattle, cows, bullock, and other animals. They are not only useful to us, but they are pure vegetarian. My point here is that those vegetarian animals are strong enough and they don't need any flesh food. In fact, if stupidly flesh food is given to these veg animals, what will happen? You all know about the mad cow disease, the syndrome called BEC. Friends, this BSE, bovine spongiform encephalopathy. You know what happened a few years back in England? It was a result of feeding rendered sheep byproducts to cattle as protein supplement. These sheep were infected with scrapie, an SE disease known for over 200 years. Now, if sheep food can make a cow mad, what do you expect the result on human being? Millions of innocent cows were killed mercilessly just because they were suspected to be infected with BSE, and that too for no fault of theirs, but the stupid ways of feeding sheep protein on absolutely unnatural diet for a cow. So is the case with humans. Animal protein is not natural for us. Similarly, millions of chicks were destroyed in Eastern Asia countries because they were infected with certain disease. Now coming back to healthy diet, I will quote from one Dr. Dean Ornish, who has written a very learned book on how to reverse heart disease without surgery or drugs. And this book, my friends, is the best seller in America now. It has really created interest in the people of America and all over the world for that matter, that veg food is definitely better from medical point of view. He has given two types of diet, one reversal and one prevention of heart disease. Both are strictly veg diets because he has proved scientifically that veg food is the best food for a human being. It not only helps heart patients but also reduces risk of other degenerating and fatal diseases caused by flesh food, diseases like cancers of colon, cancers of breast, cancers of prostate, obesity, high blood pressure, stroke, diabetes, gallstones. The Surgeon General of America has confirmed this in the report on nutrition and health. He has given certain facts for protein. Friends, we'll have to be a little technical about it. The protein is formed from building blocks called amino acids. These are of million varieties, of which only three are critical for us: lysine, tryptophan and methionine. All these are available in animals as well as veg, plant food. But when one consumes animal food for getting these three critical amino acids, one also consumes unnecessary elements like cholesterol, saturated fat. Friends, these are the two things that are the prime reason, the killers for human being: cholesterol and saturated fat. Now let us address the issue that is universally put forward, that we do not get sufficient protein from vegetarian food, and so we have to turn to flesh food for adequate supply of amino acids. Now this is a fallacy. A combined meal of legumes and cereals — legumes means dal, pulses, and cereals mean wheat, rice, etc. You have to combine these two and you get a complete balanced diet which provides complete protein, which is not different from protein found in eggs or meat, but without cholesterol and animal instincts. One dietic association has stated positive relationship between vegetable lifestyles and risk reduction for several chronic degenerative diseases, as mentioned earlier. It has confirmed that veg diet is healthier and more nutritious. Plant food is totally free from cholesterol, which is only found, which is found in both. But cholesterol is only found in animal products such as meat, poultry, fish and dairy. Fresh food is also high in saturated fats, which our liver converts into cholesterol. Our body makes all the cholesterol we need. Now this is very important, friends. You must understand, we need cholesterol, but we don't have to take cholesterol from animal food. Our body, it's a wonderful mechanism. The biochemistry, the chemical factory of our body, can manufacture all proteins, all cholesterol from our own system. 3/4 of the cholesterol in our blood is made by our body. It is the excessive amounts of cholesterol and saturated fat in the diet that lead to coronary heart disease. The other diseases, friends, which I have summarized from various journals, medical journals: epilepsy, infected flesh, kidney diseases, excessive protein, excessive uric acid. These are all the diseases because of the flesh food. Rheumatoid, arthritis, gout. This is the direct consequence of uric acid found in flesh food. Degeneration of intestines. Decay in immunity system. Dr. Deepak Chopra of America has stated that our body is capable of living for more than 100 years if we take proper care of it. Now look at the population in North extreme north region Eskimos. Now, perforce, because no vegetation is available, they have to take flesh food. And the average life of an Eskimo is only 30 years. All non-veg food is devoid of vitamin C and vitamin A, which is naturally available in vegetables. Avidin in eggs and other dangerous bacteria are responsible for many skin diseases such as eczema, scabies, leprosy, etc. Now, I'll give you a certain scientific facts. One medical study has proved that there are less heart diseases in veg people than flesh eaters. It's a well-known fact that not only in India, but even in advanced countries, there is no foolproof system of medical exam of animals before slaughtering. Thus, diseases carried by them are passed on to the humans who eat flesh food. Friends, we all know that like human beings, the animals are also infected by diseases. And they are the carriers of the deadliest germs. And when these animals, they die and one eats that flesh, that diseases which were infected and which were the part of the dead body of that animal is again inherited by us. 9% of food poisoning cases, 90% of food poisoning cases are in flesh food eaters. When an animal or bird is brought to a slaughterhouse, now this is a friend which is again, it needs some explanation. If you have visited a slaughterhouse or a poultry, you will know this. When the animals are brought to the slaughterhouse and when they know that they are going to be slaughtered, the pain, the agony, the anguish that runs in the system, it gives rise to adrenaline, the hormones, which mixes with the blood and into the flesh. Now, these instincts of fear, anguish, anger, despair, all negative points are then becoming part of the flesh food and it passes on to the person who eats. And that is why, friends, I say that when one eats flesh food, he becomes more like animal and less like a human being. I will now turn to the fallacy that eggs are necessary for growing children because they contain protein. As I said, excessive protein is more harmful than useful. And the protein that we find in pulses, in cereals, is much more richer and natural than the protein, the excessive protein we find in animal food. Now, I'll give you the example of egg. Each egg weighs about 100 grams and has 170 calories. It contains 13.6% of protein, as against that any dal or pulse will contain 24% of protein, much more than the egg, of same weight, 100 grams. Egg will contain 13.3% saturated fat, while there is no saturated fat or very little of 1% in cereals and pulses. 450 to 500 milligram of cholesterol is contained in egg, one egg. Amino acid called melionine, which destroys vitamin B. Large quantity of sodium salt. All these are part of the egg. And when one eats egg, he is then infected. His body is infected because of this excess protein, cholesterol and saturated fat. It does not contain any carbohydrate. It does not contain any fiber. Friends, the medical science has now come forward and stated that for our digestion, we must have fiber. And fiber is found only in vegetable food and not in the flesh food at all. Now, cost-wise, I am only comparing the egg now. Cost-wise, for 1 gram of protein, the cost of egg is 4 to 5 times more than the pulses, wheat or soybean. Cost of 100 calories, it is almost 10 times the costlier than the pulses. Thus, pulses, wheat, etc. are not only cheaper, but they provide other important nutritions like vitamins, minerals, fiber, etc. Now, let's take a look at the poultry farming. Now, they call it poultry farming. It's a totally misnomer. I tell you, sir, it is a poultry factory. the way in which the birds are stored there. They have to climb upon one another to eat or drink, because there is not sufficient space. Even the poultry people, they say that this is our factory and these are our merchandise, they are goods, nothing but our products. We are not concerned whether they are living beings or not. They are totally devoid of any compassion, any karuna, and that is why these things are also reflected in the birds. The birds are stored like commodities. They are fed unnatural food and administered drugs which are harmful for humans only to speed up their metabolism so that they can produce more eggs. The poultry people are only interested in making profit. And the result of this, they die premature death. It affects physical as well as mental health, intellectual and emotional growth. Egg is poison for children. Egg begin to rot immediately unless they are put in deep fridge. But when they are marketed, they are prone to decay and disease faster. Vegetable egg is again a myth. It's a fallacy. No egg can be a vegetable egg. It's an animal product and animal product only. It is definitely it's definitely an animal product. It can never be called vegetable item. It's a misnomer. It's a deception. Friends, I will now turn to the economical aspect. Now, these also I have studied from various journals, medical science, and more important, from the statistics department of the government of India and government of America, the UK government, etc. But I will not, that's why, give you the citations during my talk, but I will give you the summary. UK. The survey has stated the land required to produce the fodders to feed the animals to obtain fresh food is 14 times more than that required for vegetable diet to feed men directly. Because what happens? First you grow fodder. You feed it to the animals. And then you kill the animals for fresh food. And that is how you get your fresh food. But if the same land is used for agriculture, for pulses and cereals, that same piece of land can support many more families, and here only few families can be supported by using this land for pasture. I have been given one statistics: 10 square acres of land can support 10 heads of human beings or 10 heads of cattle for the whole year. But 10 heads of cattle for meat cannot support even one single person throughout the year. Natural grass or pasture can, and grain crop both genetically belong to grass family. You see, once the crop is harvested, what we have is sashish or stalks. These are again the source of, excellent source of biochemical fertilizer or manure. Look how many crores of rupees of our foreign exchange we are wasting on artificial fertilizer and chemical fertilizer, which we all know is extremely harmful to us. But because we are not able to get the natural manure which we can get from cattle and animals, we are destroying them, foolishly destroying them for our own food. But we are not considering the fact that the manure that these animals produce are much more economical, much more healthier, and much more useful to our country. It's now a well-known fact that 16 kilogram of food grain are required to be fed to one animal for forming 1 kilogram of meat. Thus, by feeding animals reared for slaughter, the country is deprived of vital food grains which can feed many, many more people. So, not only for growing food, but also for pasture and for manure, we require land. The human oncogene, work done by Professor Wilbing from Massachusetts, it has stated that to obtain 1 calorie of animal flesh, 7 vegetable calories have to be spent. Then the study further shows that the land needed to graze one average animal can sustain 5 average families. Friends, I will not burden you with facts and figures, but the summary of all this is that it is very economical to feed people on veg diet rather than on flesh food. Now let's take the other point of view of economy, ecology, environment, slaughterhouses, etc. Production of animal flesh food require more land, more water, more food grains for feeding animals meant for slaughtering. Now this will again destroy or rather disturb the balance of our ecology and environment. Because the resources are always limited, we have to make best use of that. Either we grow crops or we rear animals for slaughtering. And look at the way the slaughterhouses work, how they are maintained. It's simply a hygienic horror. The conditions are appalling and totally unsanitary all over the world. Yesterday only on internet I got a report from foreign countries, advanced countries of America and France, that the conditions of slaughterhouses there also, it is reported, are totally unsanitary. I got a copy of white papers from a government accountability project of America, fighting filth on the kill floor, a matter of life and death for America's families. Slaughtering of animals, meat processing plants, and finally most unhygienic ways of transport and sale of flesh food has made flesh food totally unfit for human consumption. And do not think for a moment that imported, packaged, nicely packaged meat or canned meat is totally hygienic. No, my dear friends, that is also coming from those slaughterhouses where all these things which I have stated of medical science will apply. Not only that, they add certain preservatives, certain chemicals, certain additives which will keep the meat fresh. Environmental consciousness in India and abroad has now driven many people to vegetarianism. Environment-friendly veg foods are now available. The craze now in all over the world is to go for environmental-friendly veg food because it is considered friendly and healthy. The green factories or glass houses are now exporting plant food, including fruits, to those countries which cannot grow them because of climate. The modern transportation system has given a much better alternative for food choice. In fact, for developing nations like India, government and NGOs should give more emphasis on larger production of more exports of plant food, which will solve the economic development of our country. Now look at the pollution. The pollution caused by legal and illegal slaughterhouses is terrific. The discharge of effluents from even so-called modern abattoirs is in the open and exposed to elements and public gaze. The carcasses of animals, the flow of blood, the horrible stench, etc. will add to the pollution. Ecological balance. Utility of animal world for human welfare cannot be overemphasized. Both are interdependent. Cows, sheep, fish, frogs, etc. are much more useful to us alive than dead. Then why should we kill our friends and our helpers to satisfy our taste buds? We should not be so much ungrateful, my friends, to our lesser beings, we call them animals or birds. Look at it from another point of view of natural manure. I have already stated that the animals produce much more natural and healthy manure than the artificial manure. Artificial chemicals manures cost us dearly. Now again, coming back to our economic term, we are importing artificial chemicals for manure purposes. That is again a drain on our exchequer. Friends, I will now briefly give you historical and geographical views. I have already touched upon it. Historically, in certain dry areas of miles and miles of desert where no vegetable can ever grow, maybe only food or survival was the animal food. Geographically, I stated as like Eskimos, there was no alternative. But once we have got this better alternative, which is healthier, which is more economical, which is more eco-friendly, why not go for such food? And friends, I will now go to the most important point, which will prove my point beyond any doubt, that why man is vegetarian by nature. I have got some 16 points here to compare. how our body is built up. As Mr. Trivedi has started the ball rolling in this fashion of bovine teeth and non-bovine teeth, teeth embed. Now I will first say about herbivorous. Teeth of herbivorous animals are embedded in the jaws, short, blunt, close to one another. While in carnivorous, they are sharp, pointed, long and conical. The two or four teeth that we have got, like some people say they are like dog animals, they are not for meat eating, but they are found also in apes and chimpanzees, and which are fit for plucking the fruits and eating the fruits. The claws, no sharp nails for herbivorous, they are fit to pluck fruits only, while in carnivorous, the sharp nails helps in tearing apart the prey easily. Jaws and chewing habits. Jaws of herbivorous will move up and down, left and right, that is in all directions. They swallow their food after chewing. While the carnivorous, the lower jaw moves upwards and downwards only. They swallow their food without mastication. Now friends, you go on comparing this. I will only say herbivorous and carnivorous. It is for you enlightened friends to see how our human body and parts of our human body will fit, whether it will fit with herbivorous animals or with carnivorous animals. Tongue. The tongue of herbivorous is quite smooth, while that of carnivorous is very rough. Drinking habit. That's a very important thing. My friend Dr. Paresh Dalal told me. He said that these herbivorous animals, they drink water with lips by suction, while all the carnivorous, they drink the water with tongue, they lap up. We don't do it. We always use our lips. Now come to the length of intestine. Longer intestines are found in herbivorous, about 4 times the body length. This cannot quickly expel the flesh food, while in carnivorous, smaller size of intestine, almost equal to the body length, and helps to expel flesh food before it gets contaminated. Liver and kidney. Smaller in proportion in herbivorous, so they are unable to throw out waste material easily. While in carnivorous, liver and kidney are longer in proportion, so they can throw out waste material easily. Digestive system. There is a less hydrochloric acid in digestive system of herbivorous, thus flesh cannot be digested easily, while obviously in carnivorous, the quantum of hydrochloric acid is much more, and that is why they can digest the flesh food. But human being cannot. Salvia. In herbivorous, like human being, the salvia is alkaline and contains phytalin, which helps in digesting carbohydrates found in the grains. While in carnivorous, the salvia is always acidic. The blood pH is alkaline, like human being in herbivorous, and acidic in carnivorous. The blood lipoproteins. Human blood lipoproteins is similar to all herbivorous, while it is not similar to that of carnivorous. Sense is weak. All the senses, particularly the eyesight, is weak in herbivorous and very powerful in carnivorous. Sound, the voice is not, the herbivorous sound or even the human sound is not frightening, unless of course we can make it now frightening. But by nature, the sound of all herbivorous is mild, while that of carnivorous, like lions and tigers, is very coarse and frightening. And lastly, infants. Normal sight power of right from, now see the young ones of herbivorous, right from the moment of birth, they can see very clearly. While all the infants of carnivorous wild animals are blind at least for a week. Now friends, it is for you to justify whether man fits by nature in this category of herbivorous grain eaters or in the category of carnivorous, the flesh eaters. Now friends, I will now tell you about certain great persons who condemned flesh food. Looking at the world's history, we find that all great scholars, philosophers, scientists like Einstein, artists like Leonardo da Vinci, poets like Milton, Pope, Shelley, and writers like George Bernard Shaw, and religious leaders, of course, of the world. Now, who are those people? The mathematician, the Pythagoras, the Plutarch, Newton and Einstein, the scientist, Dr. Annie Besant, Reverend Dr. Walter Walsh, George Bernard Shaw, Tolstoy, the Greek philosopher Socrates and Aristotle. They are all enlightened people, and they say,
yes, sir.
They say that blessed are those with noble qualities of tolerance and compassion, love and non-violence, who are not flesh eaters. Now, friends, I will quote from George Bernard Shaw, which is very famous and widely published. We are living graves of murdered beasts. Listen what he says. We are living graves, moving graves of murdered beasts, slaughtered to satisfy our appetites. Like carrion crows, we live and feed on meat, regardless of the sufferings and the pain. Doctors once advised Bernard Shaw. He was very ill. He said that you must take some meat soup. Bernard Shaw said, I'll prefer death than to have anything with flesh food. And believe me, friends, he survived, and the doctor turned vegetarian. In the similar way, Mahatma Gandhi, his son was very sick. He was advised meat soup, and he refused, and the son survived. Why I am telling you, friends, all these things? That Mr. Trivedi said, yes, medically, whatever the doctor says, we have to accept, no doubt. But as I said in the very first thing, in the beginning I said, everything is relative. When doctor says something, he will say only from medical point of view. And friends, we are not living here. We are here on this earth, not only to survive. Survival is important, but not at the cost of others and inflict pain on others. Thank you very much, friends. 21st century will belong to vegetarians.